So that was the music. Good morning. Welcome to episode 68 of Coffee with the Coders. Thanks so much for joining in today. And a special thanks to those insiders who dialed in 10 minutes early or more, because I noticed some people were here when I got here. We are so happy to have you this morning and to share Paula Digby with you and our questions. So before I get into this first question, I do want to ask for more. It's one of our thrills to research and get these questions in our question bank and be ready for the next live episode. So if you've got something, send it on in. It's probably, don't think that it's not a good question, because most likely the one you're thinking about, another 100 people have it as well. And so if we get it 100 times, that's going to be a clue. This is really a topic that people want to hear about. So we appreciate your input as far as questions and topics that you'd like to hear and all that. And thanks for joining again today. Paula, would you like to say something before I jump into this first question?
Just wanted to let folks know, when you do send your question in, tell us what your provider type is. Are you a hospital? Are you the type of hospital, critical access or PPS hospital? Are you a physician office? Are you inpatient rehab facility? You know, what is your practice type or provider type? Because that's going to help us. And give us your name and contact information, although you can say, I don't want my name to be used. And so I want this question to be anonymous. And that's okay. So you can just let us know. So if it's a question, you know, I know, like when we're in high school, for instance, you don't want to raise your hand because you feel embarrassed, particularly the first few days, or in college, you know, with those big class sizes. So if you don't want your name used, that's fine. We will leave it off.
Thank you. Oh, and that's also another thing, because typically whenever there's a non-anonymous questioner that we choose for an episode, we're going to have a mugging. And that is where we provide a free Coffee with a Coder official mug to one of the people who asked a question anonymously. Now, we do appreciate anonymous questions as well, like Paula said. And there have been a couple of instances where all the questions were anonymous. And in that case, I'm over here at my desk frantically writing down phone numbers so that we can mug someone who just dialed in. Happened to be today was your day. So lots of different ways we have of putting these mugs out. The only way you can get them is through Coffee with the Coder. They're not available for sale anywhere, not even from us. And it's our joy to send them out every week, every other week, to the winner from our episode. So today's episode is 68. Wow, can you believe it's been 68 episodes? That's awesome. And my first question is from an inpatient rehab setting. Our friend Tiffany says she has a question related to coding on the ERFPI in the seventh digit. She was working on a case for a patient who fell out of bed at home and had some left shoulder and hip pain. The patient was brought into the hospital and admitted with a diagnosis of CVA. The patient fell on the acute care, hit their head on the right side, and sustained a subarachnoid hemorrhage and frontal scalp hematoma. Then the patient was then admitted to rehab. So once they got to rehab, they complained of right rib pain. They were prescribed a lidocaine patch, and x-rays were completed that were negative for fracture. The physician documented right anterior rib pain, likely secondary to musculoskeletal trauma when the patient fell, and then the following day added right anterior rib pain muscle strain. So the coder gave me S, like Stephanie, 23.41XD, sprain of ribs, subsequent encounter. So it reads to me like the rib strain was diagnosed during the rehab stay, but it likely occurred during one of the falls before the admission to rehab. Should I list the S2341XD as a complication, or should I ask for an acute code like S2341XA and list that as a complication? It looks like we used resources to treat and diagnose the rib strain, but it probably occurred before admission.
Okay, excellent question. The coding rules for reporting injuries, and I'm just going to go back so that everybody can hear this, state that the seventh character is D is used for encounters after the patient has completed the active treatment for the injury and is receiving routine care during the healing or recovery phase. CMS decided for IRF, though, to report a comorbid condition that was present in the previous acute encounter, that you would report it with the seventh character of D rather than A. The only time you're reporting that seventh character of A when the condition is listed as a comorbidity is when it happened in the IRF setting itself. If it were the etiologic and the cause, of course, the A would be the seventh character, or if it were open, a B or a C. That said, let's go and say the Earth Time Manual definition, and this is, it's changing a little bit. They just expanded it, but it basically means the same thing. It states, a patient comorbidity is defined as a secondary condition a patient may have in addition to the primary diagnosis for which the patient was admitted to the IRF. Enter the ICD codes which identify comorbid conditions that are not already included in the impairment group code. The patient comorbidities listed in item 24 of the IRFPI should have significant impact on the patient's course of treatment for their primary diagnosis. Comorbidities that are identified on the day prior to or the day of the rehabilitation discharge or the day of discharge should not be listed on the discharge assessment, since these comorbidities have less effect on the resources consumed during the entire stay. And we've already established, yes, this injury did have an impact on the encounter. And also, based on the scenario that that Pam, you read in the question that Tiffany asked, it appears that I could support that D, because the doctor at first, he says it's likely due to, which, you know, in rehab we've got that whole likely or not, or, you know, it has to be confirmed, but then he confirmed it due to muscle strain. I would like to have seen him say that it was, you know, muscle strain due to the fall in the hospital, because that would link it together. And perhaps, you know, you can query for that particular option. But I feel like you can heavily support the seventh character of D, because even though it was recognized during that rehab admission, it was actually present at the time of admission. And your coder obviously saw that evidence as well, and the coder, you know, would have listed it as present on admission, yes, as well. So, unfortunately, though, others may be able to, you know, say, well, it wasn't identified prior to the rehab admission, so there may be an argument, and there is no clear-cut answer. However, I could strongly report and, you know, appeal that situation, because it was present. There likely was evidence in the former acute chart. You can look back at your pre-admission screen and see if there's any information coming over that the patient was having that rib pain when they came in. Anything, even in team conference, you know, to show that, you know, in your plan of care and team conference, to show that this was, you know, some documentation that it existed prior to admission and it happened before, that would help to support the seventh character of D.
Thank you. Okay, I've got another one. This one's also in an inpatient rehab, and it's from our friend Jan, who's a revenue warrior. That will be opening up soon. Jan says she's an IRFPI coordinator in a hospital-based IRF, and she does coding for the IRFPI based on the hospital's coder doing the UBO4. She doesn't have a lot of contact with that group, and she doesn't know how much training they've had on the IRFPI coding. But when she sees a discrepancy, she can email questions, and they'll explain their reasoning, which will help her to make corrections. So today's question is about the use of Z as in zebra, 93.0, so tracheostomy status, and Z43.0, encounter for attention to trach. We had a patient admitted for respiratory failure after the trach and had been decannulated. The physician documented trach site covered with gauze. Nursing documents monitoring and changing the gauze, but there's no other documentation present. The coding summary did not include a code for tracheotomy, and when I inquired, they said they couldn't list such a code since the trach was no longer present. If the physician had clearly documented trach care, would the Z43.0 be appropriate? Are there differences in coding for this on the IRFPI and the UBO4? And if the physician added documentation to support trach care had occurred since admission in the discharge summary, could that be used to support the code?
Okay, yeah, and Jana, actually, because she's a revenue warrior, she got her question answered, and so we've already kind of discussed this with her. But yes, there's a huge misunderstanding, if you will. The tracheostomy is the hole. It is not the appliance. The code definition states includes toilet or cleansing of the artificial opening. It's a misconception that it can't be reported if the appliance is not there. Again, the hole is the tracheostomy. It is still there. you're still providing care to promote healing and complications can arise. Coding rules say if it's treated, if it impacts treatment, if it extends length of stay, or if it utilizes the resource and it's documented by the physician, it would be reported. So if you or the coders were performing, you know, clinical documentation improvement, and I know in IRF sometimes it's the PPS coordinators, sometimes it's the coders, sometimes it's a actual CDI. But if you were able to communicate with the physician during that admission, you know, performing a query would be huge regarding that trach care to ask him to clarify the care provided regarding the trach in his progress notes. However, one of the things that we recommend, too, is looking back at the team notes, because it may have been in team notes and the physician is, of course, responsible for those and signing off on them. It appears, as you stated, you can argue reporting it, but it's weak because the physician really doesn't indicate the continued care. He just indicates, based on what we have so far, that there was a bandage on it. I know it's crazy, but he has to validate the care and how it impacts care. Now, of course, the record in whole might show or might reflect, like looking in the team conference notes. A lot of times I find information there. And sometimes when coders aren't trained on IRF PI coding, they don't realize that they can utilize the team conference notes for code assignment. So that's another question that you need to ask your coders. I would also validate if there's any information, you know, in the pre-screen that provides additional evidence that either would support a query or support the fact that, you know, ongoing care needed to occur. Also, there are differences in coding for the UB04 and IRF-PI, but the actually, let me rephrase that. There are no differences in the way you assign this code for the UB04 and the IRF-PI. The difference is on the UB04, it does not impact payment. On the IRF-PI, it does. And yes, there's also some arguments about using it if the physician documents it in the discharge summary and, you know, says that he failed to mention it or whatever, and that it was present at the time of admission. I vote for yes, because the rest of the chart, you know, should line up with the fact that there's evidence that it was being treated and impacted treatment. There are some payers out there, I've only heard of it a couple times, but there are some payers out there that will argue if it's not stated until the discharge summary, it wasn't relevant, although you can appeal that and support it with the treatment note. So absolutely, you know, we're human. Sometimes we forget things. And at the end, if he doesn't just say the patient had it now, but he further expounds on the fact that it was present at the time of admission and care included, you know, whatever. One of the ways that I recommend that you can combat this and missing diagnoses is to, if you're able to sit in on team, sometimes it's the PPS coordinator, sometimes the coder sits in on team. If you show up with your coder's list of diagnosis codes or provide it to those in the team if you're not there, perhaps you can catch something that wasn't coded. I recommend starting each patient off really with someone reading the diagnosis codes that have been captured to date. Again, sometimes it's a coder, sometimes it's a PPS coordinator, sometimes it's someone else. Usually, the team can hear all these diagnosis codes that have been captured about this patient, and say, for example, it was speech therapy, and they didn't hear dysphagia mentioned, and they could actually get that in the team conference note at that point, and the physician sign off on it, and then it can be carried forward in the coding. So that's just an example of how it would help improve the process. So anyway, that was probably a long question to a long answer to a shorter question. So thank you.
Thank you, Paula. Thank you, Jan and Tiffany, for sending those questions in. And now it's time for our mugging. So let's see. We have two, and I've got the names under my desk, so I can't be picking one over the other because I try to be always fair. Always there. So let's see. The winner today is Tiffany. So I'll be reaching out to you, Tiffany, to see where to mail your mug. Congratulations. Everyone, look back for us again on the 29th for the next episode. It'll be episode 69 of Coffee with Decoder. And before that, on the 23rd, we're having the webinar at noon on Tuesday, the 23rd, about HIPAA. So see our Facebook page or our website to register for that. And, of course, the webinars are on sale right now, so that's really good, too. Thank you for joining us today. We look forward to seeing you again very soon.